chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the Mottawog, the Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20 and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
It is Mouthful. It's Michelle Anna Jordan here on KRCB Radio 91. Did you make it to a farmer's market? I was at Chew this weekend. I was at Healdsburg yesterday, and it was very hot, and the market was very crowded, which was good to see. And then I was at the Sebastopol Farmer's Market today, where it was even more crowded than it had been in Sebastopol on Saturday. Also went to the community celebration that took place in the parking lot of Healdsburg City Hall on Saturday. I did a book signing there with Copperfields. It was a celebration of 40 years of Wine Road of Northern Sonoma County. It was too hot. It was too hot for everybody. I don't think they got quite the turnout, but, you know, that's the luck of the draw when you plan events in anywhere throughout the North Bay and a lot of other places during the summer. You don't know what the weather is going to be. So congratulations to the Wine Road. I hope it was successful and it was a benefit for becoming independent. Thanks very much to Copperfields for featuring so many titles of my books. And we now have one of my favorite people and things in Sonoma County. I'm so happy to have her here. And there's a tie-in with the date, sort of a little tiny bit, just a day outside of it. It is Laura Hager of Sonoma Aperitif. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks so much.
I think it's your second or your third visit.
Second, I believe.
Second, okay. And we have just, I believe, Mike, we've just wrapped up our summer membership drive, and Laura very generously offered a tasting for 2 to 4 people of her aperitifs for members at the $120 level. And even though it technically ended yesterday, I think we might have a couple of more possibilities tonight.
Yeah, we have that, and I believe you've thrown in a couple of cookbooks that...
Right.
I believe that's at the $60 level.
$60 level. It is copies of what is turning out to be my best-selling book in a while. It's Vinaigrettes and Other Dressings. People think it's a great book for the summer, and it is, but it's actually a good book for year-round because it really should have been titled Vinaigrettes on Everything, and you can enjoy them year-round. But yeah, we have two copies of those, and then we have...
And unfortunately, I don't know all the other... Somehow the pledge sheets have disappeared from the studio, so we can't tell you all the other things you get for joining, but there's a scoop of ice cream from Frozen Art. There's a coupon for 10 ounces of coffee, a number of other things, including a KRCB sticker.
And I think it's all still listed on the website, I think.
Yes, it's on the website. So you can either if we're on the air, we aren't going to answer the phone. So go to krcb.org and put donate and be sure and say that it's part of Mouthful. $120. You also get Laura Hager's tasting of her aperitifs for 2 to 4 people. For $60, you get everything that's on the website plus a signed copy of Michelle's book, Vinaigrettes.
Vinaigrettes and Other Dressings.
Which, you know,
yes.
I have to say, I've got a copy of this book, and it's a great book. There's a Chinese coleslaw. I don't remember exactly the name of it, but there's a ginger coleslaw dressing that's just amazingly good on these hot days.
Oh, thank you. I have cabbage that I got at the farmer's market. I'm going to make that tonight or tomorrow. One of these days, I think maybe on next pledge, I'll offer hugs from the Mouthful dogs at one of the levels. You've heard them contribute. Next time you can see them. So, as Mike said, the best way to become a member or re-up or give an extra donation while we're on the air is to just go to the website, krcb.org, and click on that. Is it a red button? It's red, right?
It's a red button up in the top right corner, yeah, on the web page. If you are listening to us on the KRCB app, there's a little red heart up in the corner. And as Kirby Pierce always says, touch our heart and donate and support KRCB.
So there you go. And now onward to Sonoma aperitifs. Before you pour anything, I'm going to make myself wait. Let's just do a little bit of history of the country, of the company, when you started it, that sort
sure,
of thing.
Absolutely. I opened about a year and a half ago now. I started this project about 3 years ago, but it takes a long time to start a winery.
Yes.
And that's how long I've been going at this wonderful old historic site right on the border
Denman
of Pengrove and
Still Denman Creamery?
Exactly. The old Denman Creamery and then what used to be Eagle Ridge Winery in the 1980s, mm-hmm, and is now Sonoma Aperitif.
And you have... Do you have a property mate still? Do you have a winery next door to you?
Very exciting news on that front, actually, which is that I'm starting a small vintners cooperative on the site. So we can talk about that more if you like
cool,
as well. There are some really neat new people on the site.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So what inspired Sonoma Aperitif?
Well, you know, I was a journalist for most of my career, and about 5 years ago, my most hipster friend in Berkeley started making things like this in his garage. And when I tasted them, even though I had done a lot of wine writing, I thought, why have I never tasted this as a part of America's beverage culture? Mm-hmm. And I thought that people would love it. So I started doing research on it, started experimenting with different recipes, and when I found some that I loved, I started my company.
Oh, that's great. And the actual aperitifs, Vin de Grand-Mère is their
Vin
history.
De Grand-Mère, exactly.
It goes back, 600-700 years in France?
Absolutely. I was just reading this amazing new book on vermouth by Adam Ford, in which he talks about aromatized wines, which is what...
Aromatized
wines, which is what this is. In addition, that's what vermouth is as well. And it shocked me to learn that the history actually went back far deeper than 14th century France. They actually have traces of aromatized wine in Chinese vessels from 3,000 years ago. And if you read his very fascinating book on vermouth, it traces all the places they found it in Rome, in Egypt.
Mm-hmm. You know, it makes a sort of intuitive sense because we have things with sugar turn into alcohol, and there's a lot of fruit.
Exactly. And for centuries, of course, people have been using herbs as a part of their medicinal culture,
mm-hmm,
and a lot of these wines started out as the line when it stopped being a medicine and started, mm-hmm, being a delicious drink is a little blurry.
Uh-huh. As it should be.
Yeah.
As it should be. So you brought, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 today?
I did. So what I brought was 3 aperitifs, mm-hmm, two shrubs, and I'll use those as a mixer to make an aperitif cocktail for you.
Okay.
All right.
I'll accept.
We are going to start with Chinese quince, and this is really one of my favorite ones that I make. Chinese quince is an extraordinarily rare fruit mm-hmm. in California, and the fruit in this particular bottle came from a tree planted by Luther Burbank. It's from the Luther Burbank Gardens in Sebastopol.
Oh, it's in Sebastopol. Okay.
Exactly.
It's a beautiful gold, really pretty color.
And it's a beautiful and unusual fruit. It starts out looking like a bright yellow persimmon, and it gets as large as a papaya.
It's got almost a little bit of pear quality to it.
Like quince's wood.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Like quince's wood. It's really lovely. It doesn't taste like my quince, which are European quince.
It doesn't.
Yeah, it's very different.
Exactly. Although you will be tasting your quince later in the night because I actually used a quince aperitif as the base for my vermouth.
Oh, interesting.
Your quince.
Yeah, I hope I have quince this year.
I hope so too.
I think I have 5 trees now. I've got to go out and look at them because I don't remember seeing a lot of flowers.
Well,
I'm hoping we didn't lose flowers during a rainstorm.
You know, I know that's how trees are. They're often on and off year by year.
Mm-hmm. And I've had really good years, as you've known lately. This is lovely.
Right.
It is really good. What's the base?
This is a Sauvignon Blanc, Grenache Blanc blend from Dry Creek Valley.
Lovely. And then you said cocktail. Right now, there's about a third of an inch in a beautiful little sherry glass, I think this is.
Exactly. It's a mid-century etched glass, Manhattan glass. I collect these beautiful old glasses, and I do all my tastings in them because I just
they have
such a charm.
And then you, to make a cocktail, what do you do?
In this case, so what I would do, I start with shrub, actually. So what we're going to do is we're going to taste through several flavors, aperitifs, and then I'm going to make you the cocktail, because I don't actually make it with the quince.
Okay, so right now we're just enjoying this, and it's really lovely.
And there's an interesting spiciness to mm-hmm. quince that when people are at the tasting room and tasting, they often start guessing things like nutmeg, allspice. And in fact, what it is it's the quince itself is such a spicy fruit.
Yeah, I wouldn't say either one of those on my palate. I would say if I had to guess any, I might say a little bit of cardamom.
Mm-hmm.
And get that sweetness that cardamom will contribute.
Right, absolutely.
But it's lovely, and it's sweet, but it's not sweet like, say, a late harvest wine or one of the, something like framboise or something. So it's not really high in alcohol.
It's a little high in alcohol. It's about 17%.
But it's not like 40.
Absolutely not.
Yes.
And not only, it's not at all viscous, it's very light on the palate.
Yeah, very light on the palate. This is something you don't need to... You don't need to be curled up by a fireplace to enjoy this. This is something you can enjoy really year-round.
Absolutely. And in part that makes sense because it really started out as a mid-afternoon tradition and you really wouldn't want to wipe yourself out mid-afternoon.
Right. Those French people drinking in the mid-afternoon, gotta love them.
Gotta love it. Let's go next to one of my summer flavors, which is a loquat and roses.
Now, the way that you source your fruit is very interesting. Where did you find loquats?
Where did I find these loquats? I get my fruit from people's backyards.
Mm-hmm.
These loquats came from someone in Pengrove who just called me and said, I have a giant loquat tree. Want to come pick some?
How nice.
Yeah, and often I get them from the loquat trees in front of Sonoma Aperitif.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you have trees? Loquat trees.
Yeah, and once... Not Sonoma Aperitif. Sonoma Wine Club has loquat trees in front of them, and I often get them from there.
That's on 116.
Yes. And once I accidentally stole them. And I accidentally stole them because someone had offered fruit from their trees on this particular street, which is one of those very curvy streets in Forestville where it's very hard to see when one street ends and when. And there I'm driving to what I think is their house, and I see this very large loquat tree filled with loquats.
And I thought it was it.
This is it. Alas, no one, no it was not home? It.
Yes. Oops.
Oops.
Okay, so this loquat.
I promised them a bottle. Loquat and roses. I have 200 roses in my yard, and these are the roses, and this is an American Beauty rose.
This is exquisite. Absolutely exquisite. And is it the same base wine, a different base wine?
This is actually a different base wine. This is a Sauvignon Blanc from Bodkin. Have you ever heard of Bodkin? Oh, I love this winery.
All I know is that it immediately makes me think of Odd Bodkins.
Or Shakespeare.
Yes.
Yes. Bodkin actually is most famous for its sparkling Sauvignon Blanc.
Where are they located?
They are located currently in that facility, that big aluminum-looking facility that that houses a lot of small wineries just north of Sebastopol. I forget exactly what it's called.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know where. I think it's where Redwood Hill.
Exactly.
It used to be an apple processing plant, and Redwood Hill is their Sonoma Organics.
Right. Owl Ridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You know exactly where it
exactly.
is. This is just, I love loquats. We had a dwarf loquat tree when I was growing up, so I'm used to eating loquats right off the tree.
Right. I'm glad you can really detect the loquat belly. So many people have never tasted loquats before.
We see them at our farmers markets. There are two or three vendors at farmers markets that show up with them.
Uh-huh.
But it's sort of random. I'm never quite sure when they're going to be there. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, loquats.
There they are. In those lovely little clusters that they come in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, it just struck me. I know where I actually, these loquats came from a lovely woman in Sonoma who some mysterious person put up a note in her gym in Sonoma saying, "This business is looking for interesting fruit." And just from that, this lovely woman called me and said, "I have more loquats than I know what to do with."
Oh, how great.
Yeah, it was very sweet of her.
So now you're not having to scan. You're not having to go out and glean as much or search as much. People are coming to you.
They are. They are. Although, I miss the whole gleaning and foraging part of it, and mm-hmm. I plan to sort of reincorporate more.
I have a couple of referrals for you.
Great.
That I'll give you off the air. The one thing, I want to see the label of this, and I want you to talk about designing the labels, because you may have been a journalist, but you're also a graphic artist.
Yeah, that's my day job. I'm a graphic designer. And the labels are based on old 18th and 19th century botanical prints.
That's some of my favorite art in the world.
Exactly.
I just love those old botanical prints.
Exactly. And
really lovely.
Thank you.
And I love the hint of rose, which you get when you sit after it's on the finish, if you breathe in, is when I'm getting the sense of the roses.
Definitely. Absolutely.
Oh, just wonderful. Okay.
And the thing I like about using botanical prints also is because of their historical nature, it kind of matches the historical nature
exactly.
of the product itself.
I think that your labels absolutely resonate spot on with what's inside the bottle.
Fantastic.
It's just really great.
And I think you are really going to like this next one. This is an heirloom citrus aperitif. It has an interesting little bitter edge to it.
Mm-hmm. If I saw correctly, did I see a Buddha hand?
You did indeed see a Buddha's hand. The three flavors in this are Buddha's hand citron, Moro blood orange, and a Seville orange from Spain. Mm. So just the pith and the peel from those alone would add a certain bitterness to it. Mm-hmm. But I've also added gentian as an herb, which is the root of a French daisy plant. Very commonly used as a bittering agent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I should hand you my glass.
In cocktails.
Where do you find...
The gentian came from Rosemary's Garden.
Okay, and what about, where are you finding the Buddha hand around here?
That one I got in a very ordinary way from Oliver's.
Oh, okay.
They had a whole bunch of them.
Because there's, sadly, they're not coming to the Santa Rosa Farmers Market these days.
Oh, interesting.
I'll think of the name in a second. They have the most amazing array of citrus I've ever seen.
But not Buddha's hand.
They have Buddha's hand.
Oh, they do.
They have Buddha's hand. They have pink lemons. They
right.
have Seville oranges. They have they have a striped lemon or lime.
Are you talking Oliver's now or the Farmers
Market?
No,
I'm talking about a farm from outside of Fresno that they left the farmer's market for a while. If I remember correctly, someone might have been sick and they're ready to come back and they haven't. And I swear I'm ready to go down to Fresno and drag them up here. They do...
Do they have bergamot? I'm always on the lookout for bergamot. That's one of the hardest ones to find.
I'm pretty sure they do. Nice. I remember getting a couple. And if they don't, I might know somebody else who does. I'll think DeSantis. DeSantis. It's D-E and then capital S-A-N-T-I-S. And it was Angela who was the daughter who sold up here. And they do sell... I've heard that they're still selling at the Farmers Market in Marin, but they have just the most astonishing array of citrus, and I've always felt like I can't live without them, and I'm having a hard time the last couple years because it's been that long.
Absolutely. Okay, I just added a little ice to yours, and I would never add ice to white wine because wine gets watery immediately when you add ice, but because this is a fortified wine, fortified with vodka, it stands up to ice in the way that a cocktail would.
Uh-huh. So tell us, so the base is vodka and what else?
It's about 90% white wine with fortified with a vodka made from grapes. Mm-hmm. And then this is the one with the Buddha's hand and the two different oranges.
And what does the vodka contribute?
It ups the alcohol to prevent a secondary fermentation in the bottle. But moreover, because it helps extract the flavor phenols.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Better than the wine would on its own.
Okay.
In fact, many people who make this style do their full extraction in the hard alcohol. Mm-hmm. That's sort of a more modern way to do it.
Right.
The more old-fashioned way to do it is to simply do it with the wine and the alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like when you see limoncello being made.
Right.
You know, it's done with the
in
full
the hard alcohol.
Alcohol. Yeah.
Exactly.
Very lean on the palate in that pleasing way that citrus is lean.
Right.
And doggies don't get any of this because drunk doggies are not really fun.
Not a good scene. Yeah, this is one of my favorite
ones. Really beautiful.
The lightness, the slight bitter edge to it. And this is the one we're going to make the cocktail out of.
Great.
All right.
It is lovely. When people come, do they have to make appointments to come? Are you open? Do you have any regular hours?
I am a by appointment only winery.
Okay.
I'm generally open. I'm generally there on weekends, weekend afternoons. But it's best when people call. If someone drives up to my door,
and you're not there,
you know,
yeah,
right. And not only that, but if someone drives up to my door, I sign them up for an appointment when they walk in.
Okay,
yes,
there you go.
Exactly. So I'm going to start us over from the beginning by introducing a new product for me. So I'm very excited to announce that the owner of the property that the winery is located on has just added a commercial kitchen to the property, and we will begin licensing it. And I'm very excited to show you some things that I will be making in that kitchen.
And what? Okay, and is that kitchen there for various people to?
Right, it's a mobile kitchen. It's a very large mobile kitchen, and it literally just arrived on the property 2 days ago.
Oh wow! So it arrived fully.
It arrived fully
done.
Fully done, and it's just part of her idea of what she wants done with the property, which is to make it an interesting artisanal creative space. So she's just constantly sort of adding things to the property that would add to that feeling. So this is a Eureka lemon shrub, which is going to be part of our cocktail.
Oh.
I make a Meyer lemon shrub, but I also make a Eureka.
Now, I've been making shrubs for the last several years, and I just never thought to make a lemon shrub. And it makes total sense.
It's a natural, and you can make things. It's very easy to make like a really fun little lemonade with this one.
Wow.
Lemony.
Very lemony in... Well, I love lemon. I could live on lemon.
Right. So one of the things that I often say in my tasting room is I say, I'm going to pour a little shrub in your glass and take, you know, if you like vinegar, take a little taste and But I will tell you, the vinegar usually just, and then I say, but leave a little bit, and then I'll make a cocktail for you.
Oh,
but
I just drank it all.
That's exactly what people do in my tasting room.
Right? It was so good.
It's
kind of tasty. Because that last one, I thought you were going to make the cocktail on the last one, and I let you pour out some of the three citrus.
There's plenty more.
Now, what vinegar is that?
For my shrubs, I use apple cider vinegar.
Okay, I thought that was apple cider vinegar.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
I've had people suggest, champagne vinegars, and I might try that in the future. Mm. I just like kind of the sweetness and the earthiness that apple cider vinegar.
Uh-huh. I found that I like to pair a specific vinegar with a specific fruit.
Yes, I could definitely see
that. So what I did, I had totally forgotten, I made some spiced red wine vinegar, just with a lot of the darker spices, and I totally forgot about it. And then I had a lot of blueberries, so I made blueberry shrub with spiced red vinegar, and it was
I bet that was
outstanding.
Amazing.
And then when I did my apricot and my peach shrubs, I used champagne vinegar, because I didn't want to introduce that flavor of apple cider.
Right, I can definitely see that.
And then with a lot of the other shrubs, including, I'm making a Santa Rosa plum shrub right now because somebody gave me...
I made that last year and I loved it.
Yeah, well, somebody gave me a little tiny, like smaller than ping pong ball, a lot of her last Santa Rosa plums, and I couldn't eat them all in time.
Right.
So I just put them in mason jars and poured apple cider vinegar, and I'll leave it for a while.
Oh, nice.
We'll see what happens.
So this is an aperitif cocktail made with Eureka lemon shrub and heirloom citrus aperitif. And normally it would have a little Tuscan rosemary garnish, which I, alas, forgot.
That's okay. You are forgiven. Mm. It's really... really delicious.
It strikes me as just, I just love this as a summer drink. It's so refreshing. It's so light, cold.
This is the sort of drink that you should be able to go into your neighborhood bistro. Mine is K&L Bistro. You should be able to go into K&L Bistro and get something like this on a warm afternoon.
What I love about it is I've never been a fan of wine cocktails.
Yeah,
I've always thought
you.
They were kind of boring and limp and wimpy. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's
Bellinis
the vodka.
Are okay.
Yes. Well, the whole cure, the whole sort of sparkling wine cocktail, yeah. That's a whole different scene. But yeah. I'm talking about like regular still wine cocktails. They've never really turned me on. I think it's the vodka in the aperitif that somehow, and when you mix it with the vinegar, it gives it a backbone that you would find in a traditional cocktail.
Yes. It's lovely. You know, and for people who don't necessarily know what shrubs are, we should just quickly describe shrub.
So shrub is basically, in the same way that the aperitifs are wine infused with fruit, herbs, and flowers, shrubs are vinegar infused with fruit, herbs, and flowers. They're actually, you generally made equal parts fruit, sugar, and vinegar.
Mm-hmm. And so that's it's the quantity that sets them apart from simply flavored vinegars.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But this is just, I could drink this every afternoon, especially in hot weather.
Yeah.
It is. Now, can people?
And I'm also going to. I call this at the.
So there's more to the same
drink? There is more. I call this the ever-evolving cocktail.
What fun.
A little layer of champagne or Prosecco on top is also fun.
And this is Corbel.
Although some people love it before, so it's always iffy about whether you should mess with their cocktail, but
it's good both ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit, well, of course it's lighter. It's a little bit lighter when you add that. And you added just a really small amount of sparkling
just
wine.
Just a little layer right on the top.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's great. And on that note, why don't we finish our cocktails to a little bit of music?
Fantastic.
Listen to my tale of woe, it's terribly sad but true. All dressed up, no place to go, each evening I'm awfully blue. I must win some handsome guy, can't go on like this. I could blossom out, I know, with somebody just like you. So,
an anonymous donor who called in with a $120 donation. That donor is going to be getting the aperitif tasting that Laura is doing right here in the studio for Michelle for two or four people at her aperitiferie.
A winery.
Okay, it's a winery. But anyway, that person is going to be getting that tasting, and now we'll go back to the discussion.
And can I tell you why it's a winery instead of an aperitif?
Yes.
Legally, in order to produce this product, I had to be a winery rather than just a rectifier, say. Which, mm-hmm. And I also, because it's an aperitif and aperitifs are so new to the American market and so really unfamiliar, I would say that 50% of the people who come to taste, their first question is, well, what is an aperitif? And so I knew that I needed the ability to have a tasting room, and that's why that's the other reason I became a winery.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I figured you must have had a time of it with,
the ABC and the
ABC,
TTB.
Yes.
Right. It was a new thing, actually.
Making it up,
so it was,
as they go along.
Exactly. And in fact, so an interesting thing for listeners to know is that when you make a product like this, you actually have to submit your recipes to the TTB.
The full recipe.
And since I make so many different flavors, my initial question was, oh my God, you guys, am I going to have to file 40 different recipes with you guys, and we figured out a way that it could just be like
so many much
options.
Fruit.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you call it qu'est-ce que c'est?
I call it qu'est-ce que c'est for a funny reason. When I first applied to have my label approved by the TTB, I had the name of my company, Sonoma Aperitif, largely across the top, as one would. And the TTB said, I'm sorry, the United States government does not consider this an aperitif. And I'm like, 700-year-old French aperitif tradition? They said, well, too bad. The American definition of an aperitif is that it is infused only with herbs and spices, and if you add fruit, you fall out of that category. So they said, you're going to have to come up with another brand name for your product. And this was sort of on the spur of the moment, and I'd been calling myself Sonoma Aperitif as I'd been doing all of my sort of pre-license marketing and things. And I said, well, on the spur of the moment, I have to come up with a totally new name, and I can't tell people what it is on the label. And they said, yes, that's right. And I was kind of mad.
Yeah.
So in a peek, I just kind of said, fine, we'll just call it qu'est-ce que c'est, which means what is it in French.
And they went for that?
And they did. They did. They just kind of laughed and said, okay. They let me put my company name on the bottom. So
and they did.
They did. They said, well, you can't call it an aperitif, but you can call it a wine specialty product.
Made by
Sonoma Aperitif. Okay.
And
so that's what it is.
So once you add fruit, what does the American government say it is?
A wine specialty product.
Oh.
I said, very sexy sounding.
Yeah, really. That's a really sexy name.
Right, exactly.
Interesting. Now, where does vermouth fit into all this?
Well, so this is interesting. About a year ago, more than a year ago, about a year and a half ago, I was approached by Michael Muscardini of Muscardini Winery. He was looking around for someone to design his vermouth. It's actually quite a lovely story. His mother was a very old-fashioned Italian lady, and every afternoon...
Was his mother Doris?
I don't recall her name, actually. That's a really good question.
You
probably know her.
Yeah, I think it's Doris.
So she was in her mid-90s, mm-hmm. and it was her tradition to have a small glass of sweet Italian vermouth and an anisette biscotti almost every day of her adult life in the late afternoon.
A
good tradition, exactly. And when she died, he wanted to create a vermouth in her honor.
Oh, how sweet.
I know. It was
What's
really wonderful.
It?
It is called the Muscardini Vermouth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And
he...
You just set out... Had you made vermouth at that point?
So, interestingly enough, I got a call. I was recommended by Brian Cooper of the Sonoma Wine Club, who likes my palate, and said, give Laura a call. And so I talked to Michael, and I said, well, you know, Michael, I'll be honest with you. I have never actually made vermouth. But what I know how it is made, and I know that it's made in a similar... It's much more complex than the products that I make. There are many more ingredients. Mm-hmm. But it's made in a similar way. And I would love to give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
And so we agreed to do that. And then we had these lovely sort of... I went around trying to create a recipe, and I tried to be very scientific at first. I tried to create like a base recipe because, so what a vermouth is, this particular type of vermouth, which is a sweet Italian vermouth, it is a white wine infused with like, say, 30 different botanicals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, I'm going to create like a base, you know, and then try to build from there because that would be my sort of scientific approach. So I tried that for a couple of months, and it was going nowhere. Yeah. And finally, I thought, okay, I'm just going to go to my favorite little organic nurseries. I'm going to talk to their people and say, tell me all the interesting aromatic plants, flowers, or herbs that you have here, and do you mind if I eat them? And so I nibbled my way through several local nurseries, just kind of pulling things that I felt.
Amarisa's?
I did. In fact, I went to Amarisa's. I went to Cottage Gardens in Petaluma. I went to Harmony Farms, of course, here in Sebastopol, nibbling my way with their permission through their aromatic plants. And I just pulled
the ones
things
that
I thought, well, that'd be interesting. I think there's a note I would like. And then I went home and I just sort of intuitively put together a vermouth.
And it was, what was the liquid?
It started out with a Muscardini Pinot Grigio.
Oh, okay. Interesting. And what are some of the...
First of all, you know, he has a lovely grappa, and we thought, maybe we'll fortify with the grappa. Mm-hmm. But it was much too strong and mm-hmm. too determined of mm-hmm. a taste. And
yeah. Vermouth... That's a good way to describe grappa.
Exactly. and vermouth... are usually fortified with brandy, so that is what we ended up fortifying with.
Fortified with brandy.
Yeah.
Is there any absinthe, artemisia in it?
Well, you know, I will tell you, I really, really wanted to put some wormwood
in it. Oh, that's right, wormwood.
Wormwood, exactly. And I was very excited because I had heard that the TTB had finally legalized wormwood for the drink production in the United States. But I thought, okay, I'm just going to be careful. I'm going to call them first, and I'm going to ask them, like, how much is allowed. Because I knew they would have some sort of limit. And so I called the TTB, and I said, hey, I'm very excited. I heard that you've legalized wormwood, and I'm making a vermouth. And the guy starts cracking up on the other end of the line. And I'm like, I'm getting a bad feeling, right? And he says, yes, we have legalized it. We have legalized it at one part per million.
That it was 10 parts per million.
It could be, but I think it was one part.
Because
it's either...
Because St. George has way more.
Oh,
Saint
yeah.
St. George absinthe, which was the first American-made absinthe after
the
ban was lifted.
It could be 10 parts per million.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, so tiny.
Right.
So and so much smaller than is allowed in Europe.
Right.
That, and not only that, that when you do that, you then actually have to you have to submit the actual liquid and for analysis in Washington, D.C. to make sure you haven't gone over that amount. And so Michael was just like, let's skip the wormwood.
You know, if you get a chance to have the people from St. George talk to you about the process they went through, pretty funny.
I wonder if they have to, I've heard that you can use wormwood at higher parts per million mm-hmm. if you take out, I think it's called
Chuhone.
Right.
The Chuhone.
Exactly.
And it's interesting, the Chuhone, if you look at the molecule, the breakdown of the molecule, it is, I think, just one hydrogen bond different from THC.
So interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lovely book about absinthe that Barnaby Conrad III wrote. And I think, I'm almost positive that it's in his book. You go in the back, and there's diagrams of the molecules of THC and Chuhone.
Interesting. I was really sorry when I learned that we couldn't use it because I had done... multiple sort of testing runs using different bittering agents. Mm-hmm. And I could totally see why wormwood would be the preferred one.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's also, lovely. It's a lovely flavor.
Exactly. And also why it's called the fairy. Because
the green fairy. Yeah.
Exactly. Because it hits the fore palate. It has a lovely bitterness on the fore palate. And then it just disappears in your mouth like mm-hmm. smoke. It doesn't do that bite on the back of your tongue that, say, too much gentian would do.
Yeah. And supposedly, the other reason that it has the green fairy attributed to it is when you're drinking real absinthe with the higher levels, colors are enhanced visually.
Oh, interesting.
But the colors that are enhanced are the green and yellow spectrums.
How fascinating.
So it's called the green. There was a man, I'm not going to think of his name right now, he owns, and I think he still owns, the wine shop on the east side of the plaza, the wine exchange in the town of Sonoma. And he had one of the largest collections of absinthe posters, original absinthe posters.
Amazing.
And I've done a couple stories on him, and we went through, and all the posters have that green fairy color in there. And they all have a keyhole, because it's, you know,
hidden and forbidden.
And a keyhole into that other realm.
Interesting.
And he sold the collection. He sold the collection to... a company importing absinthe and making absinthe glasses. And they promised they were going to put it on display, but I haven't heard. They're based either in Marin or Petaluma, but I haven't heard about it being on display. So we can talk about, you just start talking about absinthe and you go through that keyhole and talk forever. So did you bring vermouth to taste?
I did bring a vermouth. I brought my own vermouth. I wish I had I must say that my Muscardini vermouth was so popular that the little bit that I had left over from my experiments
is
all gone. but if you want to try it, you can go to Muscardini Winery.
There we go. And is
on Sonoma Highway.
Let's see. Is your vermouth now one of your items at the the winery?
It is. I'm currently doing the formula dance with the TTV again.
Okay.
But when that is done.
So what are some of the other herbs? Do you have any salvias in there?
I have one sage in there. There's a lot of... one of my favorite new herbs, which I actually, when I'm doing a tasting at the tasting room, I just cannot resist running out to the garden to pull this leaf and say, oh my God, you have to taste this amazing herb. And it's anise hyssop.
Oh, yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
And with those beautiful long purple spikes. Uh-huh. And the particular one I have is called black adder anise hyssop. It's this incredibly kind of nuanced fennel mint and sweet, almost sweet like stevia. It's an amazing thing. I tore it up recently and put it in a salad that I took to a dinner party.
Oh,
and
nice.
It was wildly, wildly successful. People were like, what is this amazing flavor? So run out to your nursery and get one of those black adder anise hyssops.
And what a great name that is. I think a lot of people, wonderful, wonderful aromas.
Thank you.
That unfolds like a piece of origami paper. You just get this flavor after flavor after flavor at different stages.
That was the idea. 30 different botanicals. And when I design a drink, interestingly, I think of it almost funny because I'm not a very musical person, but I think of it as in notes. Like I want a bass note here.
The melody line.
Notes. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, you accomplished it. Congratulations. It's gorgeous. Mm. Really beautiful. Now, I think a lot of people, there's dry vermouth, or there's white vermouth, you know, there's more.
There's a dry vermouth and a sweet vermouth.
And the dry vermouth, it's like,
that's what you put in martinis.
Right, and I think that's how a lot of people know vermouth. But it's really much more diverse.
It's a hugely diverse field, like what vermouths can taste like.
Mm-hmm. Do we know where the name came from?
According to the Adam Ford book on vermouth, which is what I've just been reading, which has been my bedside reading recently, it does not, everyone always thinks it comes from the German word for wormwood. And that's, in fact, what I thought it came from, which is vermut, which sounds like vermouth to me.
Sounds like a reasonable assumption.
He makes a case for it not being that. I don't actually remember why he makes that case, sadly. Yeah.
I remember when absinthe was still completely illegal.
Uh-huh.
One of the arguments that people who knew the industry well said, but it's already here. It's in vermouth.
Right. So, interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was only... that's surprising to me since you have to...
Yeah, since you have to
submit the formula.
I'm wondering if it's...
Or what maybe I think people just left it off,
or if we were just getting vermouth from Europe and no one was, and it just wasn't on the label.
That's absolutely true.
And they weren't tasting it.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
And that's what people said was, and it's not enough. You don't get. I experimented before it became legal.
Uh-huh.
A friend smuggled a bottle of Japanese absinthe to me.
Oh, interesting.
And she went through a great ritual. She got this bottle of Japanese whiskey, steamed open that came in a box.
Right.
Steamed open the box, put the absinthe in, sealed it so that's what it looked like. It had never been opened, and presented it to me.
That's
amazing.
And
I thought I'd never, ever even try it. And I had it for nearly a year. And then I tried it one night. And you know, I set the stage. Didn't eat very much during the day. I had I had some nut. You know, I researched what you might eat with it, and then I had over the course of maybe 2.5 to 3 hours, I had 3 cocktails. And you know, you do like in a glass, you do about an inch and a half,
and
then you add the water,
did you do drip the sugar,
and you drip the water.
Nice.
You don't set the sugar cube on fire,
uh-huh.
which. that,
because that would caramelize in an odd
and that's
way.
What would happen. And I think where that became common was with some really cheap, bad tasting.
Oh, that's funny.
There's some very bad tasting absinthe. There was some very bad stuff out there. So that's right. Where I think the setting the sugar on fire came from was just, it was
attempting
god
to hide
awful.
That.
Yeah. And so I drank 3 glasses over that time period, and there were certainly similarities with marijuana, but they were not any of the psychological or psychic. There was none of that, except for there was a little bit elongation of time.
Interesting.
But it was very sensual in that it felt like you had velvet underneath the top layer of skin.
How fascinating.
It was very pleasant in that way.
So it actually had like a psychoactive effect for
it
you.
It did. It definitely, and that's why I didn't eat anything for uh-huh. several hours beforehand. I wanted to, and I wasn't going to drive anywhere. And, you know, I was in a very safe situation.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to see, so what is this all about? I never thought I'd try this. I had written about it for years because in graduate school, I studied Oscar Wilde.
Uh-huh.
So it was prevalent in that era.
Right.
So it was very gentle. And had there been an emergency, I could have snapped out of it in a heartbeat and uh-huh. dealt with anything. There was none of that. You know, it was like having 3 glasses of wine over 3 hours.
Right.
That was it. But it had that other dimension of elongation of time. I think there was a little bit of intensification of color perception, and then that lovely feeling of velvet.
Fascinating.
So, yeah, it's really quite nice. I keep wanting, Coppola Winery needs to have it at their bar because I don't know if you've been there.
I haven't, but I often read about it in your Facebook.
Yes. Well, when you go into the bar is between the restaurant. When you first walk in to the building, you walk into the bar, and beyond the bar is the restaurant, and then to the left is the tasting room and retail rooms. But there's a case, and the case has 3 of the original costumes from Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Uh-huh.
And then all these great photographs. It doesn't have the dress that Mina was wearing when they drank absinthe.
Uh-huh.
But they have it all right there. And it's like, you need to look at those costumes and then have an absinthe cocktail.
You know, there really is like an ongoing fascination with this. My new vice watch for television on Netflix is Penny Dreadful. Have you ever?
Someone else recommended it. Is it that era?
It is that. It is late 19th century.
Oh,
you
I'm
will adore it.
Oh,
you will adore it.
Cool.
Little gruesome.
Oh,
very
really?
Gruesome.
Oh.
So okay. You might not adore that part, but
I can deal with it.
It's my new vice habit.
Okay. And you know, we've got about 3 minutes left, Mike. Okay. So what else do we? Conserves.
Conserves. So part of the aperitif process for me, and one of the reasons I'm very excited about this new commercial kitchen on the property, is making jam. And if you can imagine a large glass carboy, which is it's a big glass bottle about mm-hmm. 2 feet tall, all filled with wine and vodka and fruit floating around together and herbs, after I siphon off the liquid to make aperitif, I have all that lovely fruit that's just been soaking in wine and vodka.
Mm-hmm.
So I take that and I mix it with about 50% fresh fruit, and I turn it into jams and preserves. This is a raspberry and grapefruit aperitif jam.
Very good. Not too sweet.
Not too sweet. Right. I don't.
Much
I try
appreciated.
Not to do overly sweet. Although it's always kind of a for jam aficionados, there's the question of whether to use pectin or not to use pectin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't use pectin and you depend on the gelling of sugar, then you have to add more sugar.
A little more sugar.
Exactly.
That was the way the raspberry comes through, and that with that, and then with the acidity of the citrus is wonderful.
And that's a blackberry from my front yard. In Forestville, blackberry grapefruit again.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And so you sell these in the tasting room.
Right.
And you sell your shrubs.
And I sell my shrubs.
Okay. Because we have such little time left, let's go through. What does Kaskasay cost?
Kaskasay is $25. That's the aperitif.
And the shrubs?
The shrubs are $15 and the jams are $10.
$10. Great. And let's give the address.
111 Goodwin Avenue. In Pengrove,
And that is very near Old Redwood Highway.
Exactly. It's right on the corner of Goodwin Avenue and Old Redwood Highway, right across from the Palace of Fruit.
There you go. Easy to find. Don't go the way I did. I went the back way, and I eventually found it. It's a great place. You're there on the weekends, but it's good to call. And your phone number?
Our phone number is 707-322-8696.
That's 707-322-8696. And the website is
SonomaAperitif.com.
There you go. But don't call it an aperitif. It is qu'est-ce que c'est. And on that note, we are out of time. I will not be here next week, but we will have a wonderful archive. I will see you live in the studio 2 weeks from tonight. Check out MichelleAnnaJordan.com, where you will see a visual essay of Laura's stuff sometime very soon. Right now, there's lots about BLTs because it's that season. Have a great week.